Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week I bring you an exciting new guest to talk about various aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. I hope you enjoyed last week when our guest was actually Stanton Friedman, and he talked about his new book, Flying Saucers in Science. It was a very interesting show. He's quite a knowledgeable man, I must say. But tonight, we're moving on to a different subject. I guess you would call it ghosts. We're talking about ghosts. And our guest is Alexandra Holzer, who is actually the daughter of famed ghost hunter and paranormal researcher Hans Holzer, who I think is probably the single most prolific paranormal writer in the world, with I think 150 some books to his credit, which is remarkable. And Alexandra Holzer, his daughter, has actually written a new book, which is called Growing Up Haunted, a Ghostly Memoir. And she is actually no stranger to writing. She began her career in the arts as a graphic designer, attending the Fashion Institute of Technology, where she later created her own freelance design company. She's always been a writer and an artist, and she wrote her first science fiction fantasy trilogy and created a monthly column, Spirit Talk, which is published in many magazines. She does numerous radio shows and is actually recently inducted into Marquee's Who's Who in America 2008 62nd edition. She has four children and is continuing to write short stories, poetry, science fiction, fantasy novels, screenplays in the genre of supernatural horror thrillers, paranormal, children's animated tales, and comedy. But tonight, we're going to be talking about her true book, Growing Up Haunted, A Ghostly Memoir, which has just been released by Schiffer Publishing. Alexandra, thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Thanks, Preston, for having me.
You know, your book is really remarkable. I really, really enjoyed reading it because I think it works on, you know, multiple different levels. It's not only a story of your life in this
right.
very interesting family, but it's also a biography, I think, of your father. What a character, and what a remarkable man, and so influential in this field. And what's also really interesting about your book are just the ghost stories themselves that, you know, he's investigated and you've experienced. And so that's another level where it works on, and it's also very well written, very funny, and
Thank
insightful.
You.
So I just want to tell you, start out with that, saying I really, really did enjoy the book.
Thank you. You know, I appreciate that because, you know, when you put out any product in this life, you can never please everybody, and there's always somebody that's going to say, well, this is wrong with that or this is wrong with this. But I really was very careful in how I constructed the book in such a way that it was humorous for people, that whether they knew who my father was or wasn't, I was going to assume they didn't. So it was my job to entertain them into understanding who he was and how he had such an impact in the field, that what you see on TV is not how it always was, and that I wanted to bring a respect factor to him, even though we never, you know, it wasn't a perfect relationship and we still have issues, but that there was a lot there. And then also to talk about my mother, which in a lot of memoirs you only have this one side and the what was me tale, and perhaps it doesn't end well. Well, I incorporated my mother because a lot of people don't understand it. You know, she's related to Catherine the Great. You know, she is, she's got, you know, royal Russian heritage, and we are blue bloods. So I kind of felt that, you know, it sounded great, yeah, but, you know, my father didn't have this rich history like my mother. What he had was something very different that he came into on his own. That was a path that I feel was chosen for him. My mother was born into her life, into this bizarre mix of a family out in Europe where there was royalty. And they founded a town called Riga. And so I felt compelled to tell the story of both my parents and both their legacies because they were the ones that created my sister and I. And I felt that this memoir, which is not really being done in a memoir, depicts the whole family properly. but with humor, because, you know, with dysfunction, we all have it. And life should be funny sometimes. And so I just wanted to convey that. And I'm glad you got that, because you have to be a bit on that level of getting it and understanding where the author is coming from. And, you know, a lot of people, when they read a book, they want everything kind of segmented out for them, you know, chapter by chapter. Okay, it's going to be like this and it's going to be like that. And I feel like, oh, come on, leave them hanging. You know, you'll come up to it at the next chapter. And a lot of people, they don't like that. You know, some people just want to get it over with and then you're done. I like to keep going because I feel like a lot of points that are brought up can be brought up again in a different light, thus furthering why you're writing about certain chapters that can coincide with bringing about the same point. Because many people have different views.
Right. No, I love the way you put it together. I thought it was, and, you know, really honest. I got to applaud that, too. So.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Thank you.
It really came through, and it was definitely quick reading, too, and very interesting. And I was like, wow, what a family. I mean, gosh, I don't even know where to start. I've 150, how many books has Hans written?
He's written 146. The one with Schiffer, Spirit Connection, we did as father and daughter, where he did his book and I did The Growing Up Haunted. And I designed my book cover and Schiffer took it and, you know, kind of spruced it up and cleaned it up. And I helped with his book cover and I said, we have to keep both black. I said, I want it dark and very, you know, cool like that. And that was his 146th book. And I think he's done. You know, he, you know, probably about 10 years ago, he would say, oh, no more books, no more books, you know, but here he is, you know, it was like another 10 more books, you know, so, but he's truly done with that. He has a lot of books, I believe 30 to 40 in reprint as we speak. And, you know, it's like with UFOs and when cultures turn and become more popular, a lot of those books like the Euphonauts that he wrote will be reprinted and, which is good because, you know, these books have been around for such a long time and there's a lot of documentation and eyewitness accounts and testimonials that people forget about 40 years ago. So people like my father who write on different parts of the paranormal get to have a rerun on that because, you know, the youth that comes into play doesn't realize this stuff's been here before.
Right.
And so authors who have been around for a long time have longevity, and it really helps the newer generation be familiar, which is kind of my job, is to reintroduce Hans Holzer to them and to explain, listen, guys, there's material here that you can go back and do your research, and not just on the Internet, but you can go and read people's books, and people from today to from people from 50 years ago. You know, so
150 books, that's a lot. I have, like, 10 of his books. And
That's cool.
I thought that was a lot, but
it is a lot. I've written two, and I'm like, oy vey, I'm half Jewish. I said, I'm going to become 100% Jewish and say, oy vey. The thought of writing another makes me get hand cramps. I mean, writing is not glamorous. It is very annoying, actually. Collectively, to put together the material for a book, as you know, and then to go through that process and then submit it, and then it comes back from the editor.
Right.
And so, you know, I mean, the process of publishing is very painstaking. And, you know, it's not the way it used to be. I think today publishing has changed anyway, and it's also political. But, yeah, he just, I don't know, he did it. And he appeared on a lot of shows. He, you know, did a bazillion radio shows. He was constantly on air. Because back in the day, that's really all they had. You know, they
had
channels.
Was that how he made his living then?
He did. Oh, yeah. I mean, he was a paranormal investigator. But he was known as the parapsychologist. And between radio and on-camera interviews and showing his documentation on air, which was a very big thing, like with Amityville, you know, to go on air and to show this back in, you know, in that time in the 70s was just, you know, mind-boggling. And so it didn't bother him. He felt that this is what you were supposed to do.
Well, I remember when I first picked up his book, I think it was Ghost Hunter, and it was unlike all the other ghost books that I'd ever read,
yeah.
In that he had brought, he not only went there and experienced this stuff, but he brought mediums into it.
Oh, yes. That was the medium, which is another thing that I truly believe in, is his tool. You know, I am not against modern technology. I live with modern technology. You know, I have a dishwasher. I have a microwave. We didn't grow up with that, and I'm only 37. So I understand that side of it. But having said that, on the same front, there's a lot of equipment that you can't verify what you're picking up in a 2 mile radius at 2 o'clock in the morning in somebody's basement. Do you know what I'm
right.
saying? So it becomes a bit difficult, and so it's more like a quick thrill of what if, ooh, versus are we really, really sure? Did you feel it? Do you know? So when you have a medium in tow who is, their job is to feel. Their job is to be the ones to tell you, you know what, I'm not feeling it here, but let's move over here because here's where I'm being pulled to. It's fascinating, and I'm always blown away by the true, validated mediums that have this ability to kind of see right through you and
right.
and communicate. And I feel like, you know, it's incredible. You know, just like it is in the field of science, you know, when you're learning about how to document that there's an apparition, mediums
right.
play a huge part in that.
Well, yeah, I'm totally understand what you're saying, because most ghost hunters, they go to a, you know, haunted place and interview the witnesses and hope that they see the ghost and maybe, you know, catch a picture of it. Was, you know, and he's going in there and talking to the ghosts and sending
yeah.
them on their way.
Yeah, he actually did it. He got both results. He had gotten film and footage of apparitions, and he had the mediums come through with information they could not possibly know, and 9 out of 10 times, he got information back to the people of the house, or if it was, directors of a museum, he always gave them information, and they always felt when he left fulfilled. They felt like, wow. You know, I mean, nowadays it's very quick, 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 and people have different methods, and there's a lot of groups out there now who genuinely are coming out with an interest that maybe they've always had as a child, and they feel now it's okay to say, I have a paranormal group. You know, that's great. You know, modern day and age is great. Media is great. However, my whole shtick is what's not great is what comes with that is a bit of destruction and carelessness and disrespect, as with anything in life when we get too much of something. And
right.
so I kind of feel like it's my job to pull back and say, you know, I am learning parapsychology. I'm not going to school for it, but I'm certainly doing my research, and I've surrounded myself with female intuitives who are highly intelligent. They're younger than myself. It puts me to shame. Who are just so intelligent and are just so incredibly in tune with what's going on that I'm just in awe of them. And as women together, we have this very stronghold of going into a situation and helping the living and the dead. And that's something my father did. Now, he's a man, of course, you know, so I'm going against the grain here of having men do this, but we care and we want to help the one that's stuck, you know, and then if they want to move, you know, we'll try to help them move, and if not, okay, have a nice day, nice talking to you.
Right. Well, growing up, you know, in this type of environment, did you always believe in ghosts? I mean, were you ever skeptical of what, because, I mean, you had experiences growing up as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I always had, you know, things sit on the edge of my bed. My grandmother used to tell me stories. This is my mother's mother, who is French. And she would tell me stories. She goes, oh, I remember so-and-so sat on my bed. But you know, darling, I wasn't scared, but I turned on the light anyway. You know, I'm like, okay, Nana, you turned on the light, so now you're scaring me. You know, I mean, growing up, we had stories. We had ghost stories, you know, and accounts of what happened. And my father, oddly enough, out of everybody in the family, the only time he would tell you of these tales and cases he went on was when he had people over to entertain.
Right.
See, he almost kept it for an evening of fun. For him, it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. For me, I was like, I need 10 night lights. I need 10 candlesticks. I am not sleeping tonight. I'm 8 years old and
yeah.
I'm there. Yeah, it was just, you know, horrific. So I always experienced things, and I never felt alone. And what I mean by that is I could have gone away to my grandmother's for the summers out in Long Island and stayed with her, and I felt I was being watched because she attracted them. I couldn't get away from it. Between my mother and her mother and my father, I truly was haunted. But I just chose to ignore it and not let it get to me. Although I was frightened at times of things that I saw that then quickly vanished, and I just said, nah, nah, nah.
Right.
That's not what it was.
You had one really interesting case, which I mean shows that I think a positive side to ghosts and spirits, which was when you were very young in a high chair, I guess, and you almost
yes.
fell over.
Yes, that was in our the Hills Are Alive house in Austria, The Sound of Music, but there was never any music. I couldn't get that. But we had the Alps. It was a beautiful converted farmhouse that my mother actually converted. She was the man, he was the woman, I'm telling you. She did all the work. He sat tight on his Smith Cajona. And I was not even, I think I was probably about 1.5 to 2. And in those days, the high chairs, especially out in Austria, was made of this beautiful wood that you can imagine, heart shapes, you know, and everything, beautiful paint. But they didn't have any belts or restraining systems. So you put the child in, and then everybody's sitting at the table. So one morning, apparently we were all having breakfast, and all of a sudden I was rocking back and forth, as little children do. As a mother of four, I can attest, they do that. And all of a sudden I was going down off the chair, and below us was a hard marble-style floor. And so if I would have gone, my head would have flipped back, and the outcome would have been horrible. And instead, in midair, as I was going, my body was pulled up, forward and up, and my mother had time to turn around and grab my midsection and hold me there in place, and then the chair went down, like in slow motion. And everybody just, like, was quiet. And my grandmother was with us at the time, my older sister, so she was about 9 or 10 at the time, my father and my mother. My mother sat me back down, and from what I understand, my father was just, he looks up, he looks down, he goes, okay, good, now pass me the juice. Like, no big deal. He knew it was the lady of the house. He knew the minute we walked into that house, he told me, when I was doing research for the book, he said, yeah, we knew she was there. He goes, I felt her immediately when I walked in. I saw her standing at the end of the corridor.
Huh.
And yet he still wanted the house.
He's psychically sensitive too, then, you would say?
Yeah, he is. Oh, he is. He sees things. He will get impressions. And it's usually, people typically go towards, it's the female side, and it's hereditary in that end, which is true. But men are also very intuitive. And my father is as sensitive as they come. He's worse than me. Oh, he's horrible. He panics. He screams. He yells. He makes a big fuss. He's horrible. Yeah. Very
well,
intuitive.
Another really interesting childhood ghost encounter you had was in your bedroom, which you described in the book, in which it started shaking a can on your dresser.
Yeah, this was in our Upper West Side apartment in Manhattan. Beautiful apartment, right by the Hudson River. Wonderful. Can't think any ghosts would be going over there and saying boo, but they did. It was a school night, and I was asleep, and in my room I had this big Lifesaver can that you put your coins in up high on a bookcase. And we all were sleeping, and all of a sudden the room got cold. And it was, you know, summertime. So the air's on, but, you know, there are air conditioners in the windows. They're okay. They're not great. And I had, you know, a big blanket on me. But it got cold in the way of where my face got cold, like something kind of went over me. And that air was not that strong. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't near the air conditioner. I was opposite of it. And then I kind of felt numb. There was like a vibration. And then I heard my can shake, rattling. And I said, okay, it's way up high. Logically, which I go into logic mode, that can't be happening. And that's just, the cat can't even get up that high. I mean, it's like really where the ceiling touches. We had 9 feet ceilings. They're not that tall. And the can was literally right up to that 9-foot height.
Right.
So I knew something was in my room. I didn't know why. I didn't know who. And I felt that it came over and touched my entire body, and I got numb, and I felt like I needed to run, but I couldn't. And I got really hot, and I couldn't move, and I was paralyzed, completely paralyzed. I felt like something was curious about me, and it was touching my room and things in my room, like, you know, maybe something that used to be of the living that was like, oh, you know, I remember these, or, oh, you know, just disturbing things, you know.
Right.
And finally, you know, it stopped. It kind of calmed down. It stopped, and the light came through the window, and I had to go to school, and I was exhausted. So I didn't know what was in my room, but I was not alone that night.
Wow.
Never forget it.
See, this is amazing. I mean, can I ask you to describe one more childhood ghost encounter,
yeah,
which was,
yeah,
with the black cloak?
That
was another. I mean, these are pretty scary.
Yeah, it really is, and I still remember those images at 37. A lot of things I don't remember, but certain things you do remember, and those are things I do remember. I was in the hallway of our apartment, and basically I, as a kid, loved to dress up either as a devil or a witch, and always with a cloak. You know, typical, I mean, you grow up haunted, what do you expect? You know, witches, you know, devils, demons, you know. And so I had two black cloaks and a red cloak, which were my favorite ones, in a bottom drawer. And I always had my bedroom door open. There's a hallway, and there's a bathroom. So I'm going crossing to the bathroom, and I turn around. Don't know why I turned around, but I felt to just turn around before I was going into the bathroom. And in my room, my bottom drawer was open, and there was a black cloak, one of my black cloaks, standing up. I just lost it. I flew into the bathroom, locked the door, and didn't move.
It was
standing up by itself. The drawer had been opened, and the cloak was literally standing as if it had its own mind, like, hello, I want to come out and play. I didn't, of course. I was like, are you kidding? No, I don't play with cloaks, thank you. I was like, I didn't know what to do. My father was, where was he? Typing in his office. He could hear nothing. My mother was at work. My sister was at school. She was 8 years older than me. So she was already in college at that time. She was up at Syracuse. Huh. You know, so I was completely petrified. I didn't know what to do. It probably felt like an attorney. I peeked out of the door, and my drawer was closed, and, you know, I went in and I took out the cloaks and I threw them out. That was a sad day for me, yeah.
Well, why do you suppose it scared you so much? I mean, if you're dealing with this...
Well, because you're a kid, and that's just not cool. It's one thing to see it on TV, but it's another one. It's, like, right in front of you in your room. It's not, you know, I mean, I still would freak out now. If I go out on an investigation and I see something and I'm confronting it, I will deal with it. I promise you I will help the situation, but I will be saying every horrible curse word after and running for my life because I'm human. I'm just like, get me out of here, bleep, 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 bleep now. It's very scary. It is scary that when we pass, or if we pass poorly and we get stuck and we become a ghost versus a spirit, which is one and the same, it's from your soul and how you pass. You know, the fact that we still have the ability to have the energy to materialize and manifest, to touch something that's earthbound and move it, always, always freaks me out. Like with the poltergeist. And
right.
That's why that's scary to me. Spirits don't do that. Ghosts and entities and poltergeists, they do that. And
well,
so
ever,
I felt, you know. So.
Did you ever complain to your parents or say, you know, why are you doing this?
No, never. Yeah. I never thought to. My mother, she, you know, I didn't have that kind of relationship with her to talk about stuff like that until actually in the past 2 years, because now we're working together, which is really very cool. But I never thought to talk to her, and frankly, she really wasn't around to, you know, have these conversations. And my sister was never around, and then there was my father, who was too busy typing away on his Smith Kahuna. So that's how he got all those books out. I didn't have anybody to talk to. I had my one best friend in the building who believed me. We used to actually play with the Ouija board, and there were stories I didn't put in the book. I should have, now that I think about it. Yikes. But we've had doors slam on us in the room. We were by ourselves, and we did the Ouija, and we started to bait the entity that was telling us who they were. I think the name was Paul. And then the door slammed shut, and we let go of the board, and the room got really still and very cold, and we said, uh-oh. So, yeah, I did things like that, and I kept the Ouija board in my closet. And so you wonder what happens sometimes if those two things were connected. I wonder sometimes.
Right. Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Alexandra Holzer, and we're talking about her new book, Growing Up Haunted, a ghostly memoir, which has just been released by Schiffer Books. It's an amazing book, all about ghosts and growing up as the daughter of one of the world's most famous ghost hunters, and any of you out there would like to call in and ask our guest a question, this is a call-in show, so I'm going to give out the number now. It's toll-free, so grab your pen. The number is 888-228-4494. We'd love to hear from you if you have a question or just want to share an encounter or have, you know, some impressions that you'd like to share. The number again is 888-228-4494. And, Alexandra, do you have a website or Anything you'd like to give out? Any information
about
how people can contact you?
Yeah, sure. They can go to www.hauntingholzer.com. That's HauntingHolzer.com. And they can also go to myspace.com/hauntingholzer.
Okay. Now, Alexandra, here's my question. Hans, pretty much, if I remember correctly, didn't really believe in non-human demonic ghosts.
Correct.
As, you know, as even existing. And pretty much said that every case he had encountered pretty much involved a human spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair assessment?
Yes. Yeah. He's there's no angels, there's no demons, there's beings of light. And, of course, there's bad people that die poorly, and, of course, that manifests into these horrible entities. But he never felt that there was a heaven or hell. There's one plane, and you go on different levels in that plane. So there's 12 steps that you can reach when you die. Regardless of how you die, you're going to be hitting one of those steps. Obviously, the higher up you go, the better off you are. You got it in with God and the whole crew. Get to step 12. But if you're quite the schmuck and you are pretty bad in life and you die poorly, you're probably at the bottom of step 1, and they're poking you from down there. Yeah. So there are levels, and they're called beings of light, and that is where he's coming from. Now, personally, you know, for me, I have not witnessed anything horrific yet. I'm sure it's coming my way. I do feel protected, of course. You know, I mean, now that I'm getting into this, you know, I'm sure I'll be opening myself up to that. And I'm also intuitive, so I'm sure they're waiting, you know, in the dark corners for the next month to happen. I'll be on a location somewhere, and then they'll come out and say, okay, I'm not going to say boo, but I'll show you what I look like. That should be scary enough. You know, there goes my black cloak. Forget about it. I'll be, you know, cardiac arrest. So,
Alexandra, we actually have a caller.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
well, let's take the call. Caller, are you there?
Yep.
Hi, what's your name?
Benny from Albuquerque.
And do you have a question?
Benny from Albuquerque.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. I just wanted to say hi to Alex first of all.
Hi, honey. How are you?
Hi, sweetie.
How are you feeling?
I'm pretty good.
Good.
Really looking forward to rocking tomorrow night at the 4th of July block party because it's my main night each year to sing and play to my heart's content.
Very good.
Anyway, I just wanted to let you guys know, whoever is interested in UFOs and things, down in Roswell, New Mexico this weekend, they have the UFO Festival.
That's right.
And it's pretty funny because they had a parade to start it off. And instead of having the parade's Grand Marshal, you know what they called it? The Grand Martian.
Very cute. Very cute.
Well, thanks for the information.
The Grand Martian was the name of the person who led off the, you know.
I think we may have gotten cut off there. Are you still there, Alex?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I think we lost our caller.
Well,
now that you brought the subject, you know, I'm kind of curious myself. What do you think of the whole UFO phenomena?
Yeah, no, thank you, Annie, for that. I'm into it. I'm getting into it. I got to tell you, I certainly don't want to be known as Ghost Lady. Let me tell you, I am open to all of it, but Nessie and Bigfoot I don't do right now. I can't. Not there yet, yeah. But I do write for a couple of places for UFOs, and I didn't mean to end up there, but I did. And I am fascinated with actually flying humanoids or flying people. I'm fascinated by that phenomenon, which I know mostly is occurring in Mexico. I don't know. They know that the beaches down there are incredible. Wouldn't you be over there flying? I would, but I believe that, you know, there are other life forms, because for me to sit here and say I believe in life after life and I've experienced the afterlife and I want to help the afterlife and so on and so forth, it would be ignorant of me to say, but I don't believe in other life forms. So having said that, yes, I do believe that there are other planets and other species that are existing. We just don't know everything. And I know we're always discovering new stars and things to that nature. So I just think it's a matter of time and more research, and as with anything in the field of science. But I do believe. I'm very frightened, actually. When I see these YouTube videos of, like with the Phoenix lights or something, I just sit there and I'm like, oh, my God, I know it's a YouTube video and I'm not there witnessing it, but just that alone.
Well,
I'm like,
you or anyone, have you or anyone you know seen a UFO or had, you know, an ET encounter?
I don't know that many people yet in my life. Yeah, I'm with the four kids. I don't have a life. But I'm hoping to change that. Yeah. Watch, my best friend will be the humanoid down the street. Hey, what planet are you from? Yeah, so that would be my luck. I haven't known anybody personally, but I know many passionate people in the field that do study and research the phenomena, and I have great respect for them. One of which is my editor, Dirk Vanderploeg from UFO Digest. He, you know, he's been around a long time, and I do have a lot of respect for that. And Bill and Nancy Burns from UFO Magazine as well. I do believe that they believe. And when people come out with stories, it's the same thing with a ghost story. You have to go and you have to kind of ask the questions and go through the process. But yeah, I'd like to get more into it, and I am starting to write articles on, you know, flying people and, you know, what if there's life elsewhere? So what? You know, I bet their Christmas is probably better than mine, you know?
Well, they are similar subjects. They're both kind of slippery phenomena that hasn't been entirely proven, at least not mainstream science-wise.
Right.
Yet. But let's get back to your book, Growing Up Haunted. Because another thing I wanted to ask you is, you know, what was it like to attend one of these, I guess you would call psychic parties, kind of, that Hans Holzer put on for all these interesting people.
I kind of tried to stay in my room. Yeah, he always had to bait me out. You know, my sister was clever because she was older than I. She wouldn't be home. But so I was the one that got wrangled out of my room to come out and join the festivities of these people sitting in my living room wearing these odd-formed gowns, smelling of bizarre perfume. Some of them smelled like museums. I know I lived in one, but they smell like when you pass by, like, you know, in the Met, you've got, like, the Egyptian, you've got the tombs in the Egyptian area, and it's very musty and old. Well, that's what they smell like, and that was really creepy. I didn't like that. And they'd always reach out to me, and they'd touch my face. And a lot of them would come up to me, and they'd say, come sit by me. And because I was a very polite child, I did, but I was smushed between all the mediums. And they were all women, by the way. Not that there was any gender preference with my father, but he just happened to work with only women. Go figure.
Huh.
So it was interesting. You know, they kept saying, you're going to be an actress. It's coming. You're going to have this incredible future, and you've got so much to do. So, I mean, that was very interesting for me. But I do have to say my father worked with Philip Solomon, who's from England. He is a medium, and he's phenomenal. So, and he's been around a long time. So he did work with males as well, but for the most part, it was women. So
right. That's
what
well,
it was like at those parties.
There seems to be more women mediums than men. I mean, certainly.
Yeah,
it's
I kind of feel like, well, that's nature, though, isn't it? I mean, women and men are a very different species in themselves. I mean,
right.
Women by nature are the nurturers, and men are the gatherers. And so it's our function in life to nurture and be intuitive by nature. So it really is quite normal to see more women than men doing that. So
right. Well, another thing I wanted to ask you about, because I thought it was, you know, one of the really interesting parts of your book, was when you started taking orb photographs and how, you know, you confronted Hans with some of these photographs and his reaction. You know, it was a funny story.
We had an orb fight. Well, you know, we were visiting my sister, who lives in New York as well, at her family's. And, of course, you know, with my children, we come over. She only has one. It's like the brouhaha begins. And to get my father there, because, you know, he can't walk well. So it was a whole big production. We had my mother and her partner was there. And so everybody got along. Everybody's, you know, great. I have these photographs. And so I couldn't wait to get to my father, and I told my husband, go with the children, you know, everything's fine, let me sit with my father. And my sister said, no, you come with me. And I said, Mommy, you stay here too. Because my mother was in on this, because she started taking photos, and she said, oh my gosh, in her house, at the same time, we were getting multiple orbs around the same spots. When we would talk out and ask for proof and things of that nature, we would get a lot more activity versus if you're just taking a photo randomly.
Oh,
so we knew it was intelligent, and we knew something was going on here.
Right.
So I'm showing my father these photos, and he would just pick everything out of it, saying, well, that's, I don't see an arm here. I don't see the leg there. It's like, you know, a bucket of chicken over here. I'm like, yes, there is. I said, there's a face over here. And then my sister would chime in and say, Daddy, I see it too. And then at another time when we were back in the same location for another function, I had taken pictures of my sister, but this time it was for research. It wasn't for a family function. And there was somebody forming behind my sister in the glass of her curio cabinet that stood right behind her against the wall. It was actually a woman that was forming. And intuitively, I felt that it was my mother's mother's mother, so her great-grandmother, who in the book I talk about, you know, had very little contact with her daughter, my grandmother, and had to let go of the children during the war when she lost their father during the war and a whole thing, and so they were taken by their grandparents, and it was a horrible way to grow up. And
wow.
So anyway, I felt it was the grandmother, great-grandmother coming through. And so my father argued, I don't see anything in the orb. Is it dust or is it this or is it that? And it really wasn't. They were really forming and you could see it. But, you know, I said, you know, you need to change your glasses. And he goes, my glasses are fine, you know. So we started fighting. We had an orb fight. And he wouldn't, you know, I said, you know, before it gets ugly, I said, I need a glass of wine. We're ending this conversation now. I said, I love you, Daddy.
We actually have another caller, so
okay.
Let's take the next call.
Sure.
Caller, are you there? Hi, what's your name, and do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, I'm Juan Carlos Oganes. I want to say hi to Alexandra. Hi, Alexandra, I'm calling from Lima, Peru.
How are you? this is a wonderful man, I have to tell you. Very talented, wonderful soul.
Oh, and she is a wonderful, wonderful, talented person. I want the world to know that.
Oh.
And to you, well, congratulations also, President, for giving some space for her to expose such a great human being and what she knows the world needs to know that. The connection is kind of bad. I hope you hear me well.
Yes,
the delay between the phone call and what I hear on the internet is way, way behind me. But I'm trying to do my best to hear that, and I also want to say that there's a lot of people here in Lima, Peru, also that follow this type of topics and them, and definitely, like we were talking with Alexandra, and she knows about that. There's a lot of sightings here in Lima, Peru, and these things need exposure. I think the media, or at least sensational media people, try to look for things that just sell and not actually get down to the business, down to the point. So they give everyone a bad name, and I think the real people like Alexandra and his father really, really need the exposure they deserve, and they will have it, definitely. You have here a number one supporter.
Juan's right, though. It's true. It's and not just with me, but just like people in general that are really trying to bring about more awareness, because everything's become so media hungry now with the paranormal. And if you're not on TV, people just ignore you. And so that's, and Juan knows it. It's really a battle to try to kind of wear so many different paranormal hats and play the game. But if it brings about the awareness of that life does exist on other planets, and that we do continue somewhere, we don't just disappear, poof. Although sometimes I have moments I wish I could, with four kids, let me tell you. But it's true, yeah.
Yeah, well, these subjects are popular, and it just seems to be growing in popularity, so that's good.
There's a reason, though, yeah.
Okay, I won't take much time, airtime on you, so I just wanted to say hi, Ali. People are listening from this part of the world.
Thank you from that part of the world. Much love to you, my dear friend. Thank you so much.
I'll talk to you when I get back to the U.S. And
yes.
People are listening. We are listening.
Thank you so much. Love you. Thank you.
Okay. Love you, too. Bye.
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 Very interesting.
That's sweet. Yeah, no, they do. There's a lot of great stories out there, too. And it's global, you know, and I think that's part of it. And so when I get interviewed, like, off the book, too, you know, I didn't really talk about my impressions, but I think I mentioned in the book that I am open to life elsewhere, not just, you know, when our own life, when we pass.
Yeah, you did. You mentioned it and how Hans felt about it. And having written a UFO book, he's clearly, you know, interested at least in the subject, right?
Yeah, he you know, if I can remember, oh God help me, if I can remember as a child, you know, where we lived across from the Hudson River in New York, and which is the Manhattan skyline. You see everything; it's wonderful, lovely. But it's also you have the helicopters going over, the George Washington Bridge is down a ways, and I think at night he would skywatch from the window. And we were allowed up on our roof, and so it's, you know, it's a pre-war building that took up two whole blocks. It's an incredible building we grew up in. And when you go up on the roof, especially on the 4th of July, which is a big thing, you would look up, and he was afraid of heights. So to get him up there was a whole thing. You know, getting him up in the elevator, then you had to walk up a flight of stairs. I can't make it. Yes, you can. No, I can't. Yes, you can. Move your hump. Let's go. So my mother and I are pushing my father. My sister's hysterical laughing. I'm about to lose it. I'm like, just go already. To get up there to skywatch. But I didn't realize that's what he was doing, because he would do it from the apartment window across the river where you have this vast sky to watch. I started doing it, and I have seen things in the sky that flew around that didn't look like planes. They didn't come that low, mostly helicopters. There were things that I did see that I really couldn't understand. There was like little lights, and there was clusters of them.
Huh.
And now, as an adult, I think back and I go, "What did I witness? I didn't have a camera then. I didn't know what to do."
Right.
And well, it left me with a feeling. So.
Interesting. Well, there's a lot of stuff out there. So, now Hans said that there was two major types of ghosts or ghostly phenomena. So, like, one's an active spirit, and one's a residual haunting.
Residual haunting, or a term that he came up with called stay behind. You can have an active situation where you have a constant flow of energy moving about a certain part of a house or property, because it's not just houses that are haunted. It's, you know, land, property, things that have, like Gettysburg, prime example.
Right.
And it's constantly ongoing. And so you want to get in there and you want to try to find out through the medium, how can I help you? What's going on? Why are you still here? What do you need? And a lot of times in some of his cases, he had one case, there was a husband and wife that had passed. They found each other. Okay, they passed at different times, which is really incredible. Found each other. Their daughter had died before they died. They lost a child. Please
right.
go find her grave. It's unmarked. Please find her grave. It's unmarked. And until that happened, they could not rest. Well, of course, the medium led them to the grave. They found it in a field. They found it was a whole bunch of graves. It was grass that was grown over. They uncovered it, and then everything quieted down in that house.
Wow.
So these are the types of hauntings that can happen. They just, you know, they're waiting and waiting years and years to get through the right person to tell you, hey, go do this, go do that, then I'll leave. You know,
mm-hmm.
And then you've got the residuals where you walk into a place and you get an impression of something that happened a long time ago, but it's not active, it's not ongoing at that time, so it's really not affecting anybody in that environment. So it's really not a big deal. It's just history kind of hanging on there a bit, and it's not causing any harm to anybody. Those are the better ones, of course. So.
What about animal ghosts?
Do animals have spirits? Well, of course they do. I mean, do they look up at you in your eyes and kind of love you and touch you when they need you? That's their soul. They're not robotic. So, yeah, anything living has a soul. And if you ask me about plants, I'll have to go there, too. I believe, let me tell you, leafy greens look at me and say, don't eat me. Yeah, I do believe that. My father wrote a book, it's in German, though, about plants having souls. He did. It's got awfully printed. You would, you know, as an author, you understand. I mean, this thing looks like it was typed out and pasted, but he actually did write a book on plants having souls.
Wow.
So I believe anything living has life, therefore it has a life force, therefore it has some kind of a soul.
Right.
And feels.
Well, it's grown, or wait, before I ask you this question, let me just close the orb argument, because I kind of cut you off there.
that's okay, I was trying to run away. Go ahead, bring it back.
So what did Hans finally say about the photographs? He didn't think that they were great evidence?
He slammed it down and goes, I don't see anything here. He was wrong, you know, because we all were like looking at it, like you could see faces forming. They didn't have enough energy. The family that was around us, which I do believe was on my mother's side at the time, could not have enough energy to manifest, which happens. It takes a lot of energy to come out and say, look at me. These were my feet, my legs. Oh, look at my arms. You know, these are my top. Well, I didn't like my top back then. We won't show that, you know, whatever. I mean, so he just didn't really understand what was happening. And also, when it came to me, I have to tell you, it was very competitive. He didn't understand that what I was coming into was I was having my own, I hate the word to use psychic, but ability of seeing, because I was open to see. They've all been around me my whole life. But I was ready to see, and I was witnessing it through my camera, and he just, you know, he didn't take the picture, so therefore it could not be. That's the truth. He's the ghost hunter. I couldn't argue with him. So I went for a glass of wine. What can I tell you?
Is Growing Up Haunted your first nonfiction book?
It is, and I don't like nonfiction. It was grueling. I wanted to make up all sorts of stories. I wanted to, like, create things and things that had wings and flew out of the window onto a carpet to another place. I couldn't do it. I kept hitting myself on the hand, you know, backspace, delete. So I love doing science fiction and fantasy, and I love creating people and things that are not human but maybe were at one point in their life, versus doing this book. This book was about real people that I grew up with that I still have issues with, and I had to be polite about it, so to speak, because it was going to be published. And I left it at that and put my belief system into it so people would leave the book reading saying, wow, hopefully she's a good soul and she wants to do right by her life path and go on from there. So, yeah, I don't think I'll be doing nonfiction again unless it's through work that I'm doing to help people and their cases that need to be told. That would be the other time I would do it.
Right. Well, an amazing book. It really is.
Thank you.
I think you portrayed everyone really honestly and really, you know, in a positive light. So
tried. I can't stand my sister. Oh, who said that? I didn't say it. It wasn't me. I can always blame it on the ghost. So.
Well, what inspired you to write, you know, this book then?
I don't know. I just sat down, you know, a couple of years ago. I had an awakening 4 years ago when my late aunt came back and I heard her, and it started from there that I have to get back into writing and things. And I just kind of said, you know, the paranormal is changing, and I said, you know, I'm really proud of what my father does, and I want to become a writer like him, even though I always did write, but not professionally. And I kind of started to pay attention to who my father was, and then I got it. And then I got who my mother was. And I started, first it started out just to be a book about my father, and a publisher out in England, traditional publishing house, said, this is really good, but you need to keep going with it. And then I brought it to another publisher, another traditional publisher, I believe they're in Kentucky. They said, this is great, but you have to expand it, because they felt that the fans of my father would want more. I said, well, it's not just about my father, though. There's my mother. And so then it kind of got into that, where I rewrote the book 5 different times to appease these different publishers, finally to open it up to both of my parents and where they came from, which is important in any biography or memoir.
Right.
We all come from a lineage, and that lineage in my family was all completely haunted. So I had to do it that way. So
interesting. Well, you're blessed in that you were able to have access to all this information about your family, because a lot of people don't know.
Yeah, because, you know, my father's 88. He's not well, and he's 88. And had this, if I was in the middle of writing the book now, I would have not gotten half of what I needed from him to have those conversations. And they came late in life, because my father was 51 when I was born. I've missed out on a lot of this stuff. And now that everybody's got paranormal groups and some are coming out with shows and they have shows and I know these people, and I stand there looking around like, but, you know, I can feel this deeply because I grew up with it, but I have a better sense of understanding because he was a parapsychologist and he really did it in such a way that how could you not continue that way? You know, and mix it up a bit, but just have it in that respect. He did great. it was incredible what he did for people. He also healed people. He was a healer at one point, too. And he worked with a healer named Zev Coleman. It's just amazing. People from Europe he always worked with. I mean, it just, he did so many different avenues of the paranormal, not just ghosts, that I had a newfound appreciation for my father, and unfortunately I think it's a little too late because, you know, as he's about to leave this world, I'm entering it. If you know what I'm saying? So it's quite sad how that worked, but.
Well, he's truly one of my heroes, I have to tell you, you know.
Thank you.
Because having written so many books, he's very, very much inspired me to follow in his footsteps.
You put out a lot of good books, actually, and it's great to see that because that gives credibility to the field, and people can go and buy your books, and they know the source, and they know that they can rely on your source and who you are as a person. That, to me, means everything in this world. That's all we have.
Right. Well, you're following in his footsteps to a great deal as well. I mean, are you planning to do ghost hunting then, and the way he
does? Yeah, I'm a nerd. I want a TV show. I do. Actually, I'm trying to get one, but with women, and doing it in New York, where we're from, and doing it in such a way that my father did it, you know, keeping the science there and respect, and the healers that we are. And also, I'm trying to depict his life story. And I'm trying to get in touch with an actor to play my father, which is Joaquin Phoenix. And I've been telling everybody now that I can trust and feel comfortable with, because if I'm quiet about it, nothing's going to happen. If I talk about it, maybe, you know, I'll put out the energies there, and maybe I'll bring some positive things my way for my father, because he wants Joaquin. And, he's like, he's a vegan. He's good to animals. He's a good man. Let's get him. I'm like, yeah, easy for you to say. You sit here, do nothing. I have to do the work. What are you kidding? I said, I can't get him.
Said, well, if it's meant to be, it's going to happen, right?
That and a bag of chips. I mean, it's like ridiculous. It's Holly weird out there. I mean, these people are guarded like they're temple lions. I don't know. I mean, you know, I have a better luck going finding an alien, you know. I mean, well, I could dress him up like Joaquin. It might work, actually. they need work. I don't know. But terrible. But, no, I'm trying. I wanted to take his life story onto the screen. Primarily when I did write this book, too, to be entertaining, I wanted people like directors and producers to envision this and the characters in this story that are very quite real. In a field that's booming, now would be a great time to put it out there and show the father of paranormal and, what it was like. I mean, he wore the hat and the raincoat, and he had the serious face with the bushy eyebrows, and he had the medium in tow. He was a character out of a comic book.
Well, did he grow up, you know, being a ghost hunter?
Well, he told ghost stories when he was 5 in kindergarten out in Austria. So, yeah, I would say it's safe to say, yeah. I mean, he ended up, his first job was in a museum. Not, he wasn't a curator or anything, he was a teenager, but he worked in a museum, and he started to get a love for artifacts and archaeology. So he started to study, the history of where things came from, and he became really quite the intellect. And so he got all these degrees, and he was always in history. He was a big history buff, and he was always educated. And he was always the professor first and foremost, before anything else. And then he ended up writing musicals for way, 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 way off Broadway before he actually got into writing. And that came from a medium who was Eileen Garrett, who had the Eileen Garrett Foundation in New York, who said, Hans, you need to write a book on this. Because he did help people. He just didn't do it as a job.
Right.
You know, he had the ability to help people and was not afraid of ghosts. It was no notion to him. It was nothing major. But to these people who were frightened by their homes being shaken up, he went there, and he always had these weird friends about him that happened to be witches, warlocks, and mediums. just happened to be. Well, when you're in the entertainment industry and the theater district, you know, you attract these people, and of course he did. Tina Louise was one of our good family friends, and you know, he was a ghost hunter, but friends with these people. So it really kind of mixed well for him, and he got into it. And Eileen convinced him to write the first book, which was, you know, Ghost Hunter. And that's how he got into that. And it really became quite his life passion to go in people's homes and around the world to castles and you name it and kick that door down and say, who's here and why?
Well, he certainly did a good job.
He did. He really did, yeah.
And I have to say, you did a great job, too, with your book, Growing Up Haunted. Really entertaining and illuminating.
Thank you.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun reading it. Well, you know what? We're out of time, Alexandra.
Mm-hmm.
So
I know, I could still 10
show.
Hours. I'm glad to have been on, and I'm glad to have spoken to you. I love your work. You are a great writer as well, so it's an honor for me, so thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, hopefully I can have you on again, maybe when you
sure.
put out another book.
Good Lord, give me another 2 years.
All right, well, thanks very much.
Thank you so much. Take care.
You
Bye-bye.
Too. Bye-bye. Bye. Well, everyone, that's our show tonight. I hope you've enjoyed listening. Our guest has been Alexandra Holzer, who has just written a book called Growing Up Haunted, a ghostly memoir, which tells the story of her life growing up as the daughter of Hans Holzer, the world's most famous and prolific ghost hunter author. A very interesting book, very entertaining, just released by Schiffer Books. I hope you go straight out and buy it, because I certainly enjoyed it very much. But that's our show tonight. I hope you're going to join us next week when we bring on another exciting guest. Next week it's going to be Stan Hughes, and he's going to be talking about animal totems. He's a full-blooded Native American and has got some very interesting stories to tell. Until then, I hope you have a wonderful night and a great week. Thank you.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.